Once again, complete domination by John Bones Jones. We have one champ that stays intact and another one that, well, falls to the wayside for now. What's up, folks? Fred Ricciani, TSC, your home for MMA news updates, interviews, and everything in between. If you're new here, please consider subscribing. I'm here to recap UFC 235, Jones versus Smith. Anthony Smith, coming into this fight, was a massive, massive underdog. A lot of people thought, he had no chance in hell. And as it turned out, he had no chance in hell. But kudos to Smith, this guy who's nicknamed Lionheart. This dude who has actually had a lot of losses in his career, 13 losses, including, I believe, 8 by knockout. He's a guy that has toughed it out, won 3 straight, coming into this fight, took everything Jones had, including an illegal knee at the end of round number 4. He could have stayed down, taken the DQ victory, gotten the title. Instead, he said, no, I'll keep fighting. And he lasted 5 rounds with John Jones, but it was complete domination, as John Jones retains the UFC heavyweight title via unanimous decision. Now, Anthony Smith, he is a tough guy, the ultimate tough guy, no pun intended. But this was a case of a guy who's got a lot of heart, who certainly got enough skills to earn a title shot, but when it came to technical ability, when it came to the overall array of offense and approach, Smith just didn't have it. It was two different levels. It was John Jones, and it was freaking Anthony Smith. It was very similar. I mean, I don't even know how to put it. It was like, really, in some ways, it was kind of like, you know, the teams of the past, like the Lakers beating Dwight Howard's Orlando Magic. Like they just weren't ready, right? And Smith, kudos to him. I think he'll be all right in the long run. He's an exciting fighter, but he was out of it. He really was. And at the beginning of round number 1, you know, he had some leg kicks. He was getting inside. He was closing the distance. And after a while, maybe it was some of those leg kicks, those deep kicks that got to him, but he just kept eating shots, giving Jones distance, getting taken down. He was kind of curled up into a ball to the point where Dominic Cruz said he's never seen that in his life. And Dominic Cruz is one of the greatest UFC fighters ever. And when he says he's never seen that kind of defense, air quotes, you know, that's saying something. So it's a classic case of a guy that has a lot of heart, tough guy, but not very strategic. And kudos to his team. Okay, similar to Tyron Woodley's team. And the corner, they were saying, listen, man, bite your damn mouthpiece, find your why, go get this title. Like, they were giving him great advice as far as, like, the old mindset. But it's easier said than done against John Jones. And for the record, you know, it's easy to say, hey, go for it. Go for broke. You know, who cares? You're losing the fight anyway. Get knocked out. It's easy for us to say at home. But when you look at Smith, him taking that illegal knee on top of, you know, the elbows, the punches, kicks, everything. I mean, you know, he was probably concussed by then. He probably was foggy by then. And he did try a little bit in round number 5. But at the end, Jones just pressed him up against the cage. Like Kamaru Usman against Tyron Woodley, he was working. He was stepping on the feet. You know, he was kneeing the shins. He was doing the elbow shrugs, you know, against the face. I mean, he was working. It just wasn't Anthony Smith's night. And that's quite an understatement. But there was controversy before the fight again. Shocker, I know. Because for those that don't know, John Jones once again tested sort of positive for Tyrenabol, this steroid, which he claims he didn't know how it ended up in his body back in July of 2017. The same one that magically popped up before the Gustafson fight, causing them to move UFC 232 within 6 days to California. This trace amount of Tyrenabol popped up again. But Jones was allowed to fight because due to some faulty science, that's really just a theory at this point that I don't think has been tested on anybody else. Tested on anybody else. He was allowed to fight. And to give people like the basic general, you know, theory here, it's like apparently Jones had this metabolite that was acquired via a tainted supplement. And apparently, according to these scientists and these people researching USADA, which is super credible, by the way, it just magically lives in his system. And it could live in his system up to maybe 7 years or so. So chances are he may pass some tests, he may fail some tests, and that's just the way it's going to be. So here's the thing. Even if you want to believe John Jones, LOL, why don't other fighters get this break? Why don't other fighters, get the benefit of the doubt? Why did Tom Lawler lose 2 years of his career and then get a stiff kick in the ass for a few small amounts of Osterine? I don't know. Look, I'm sure we're going to have some type of wackiness with the John Jones drug test down the road, perhaps right after this fight. So I've lost enough vocal cords, brain cells, whatever, screaming about John Jones and this drug testing thing. But it's a bad look for the UFC. It's a bad look for ESPN, and I don't blame ESPN for paying UFC. They're bringing in ratings and everything. It's a good relationship so far, but they're in an awkward spot. And USADA, well, they more or less killed their credibility, but make no mistake about it. Trenibol, Tylenol, whatever. John Jones may be the best fighter of all time. Marred with controversy, but the best fighter of all time, and certainly the better fighter today. And yeah, that's that. As for one matchup that didn't have any doubts going into the fight, during the fight, after the fight, I'm talking about Kamaru Usman versus Tyron Woodley. Usman dominated Woodley, out-wrestled Woodley, outstruck Woodley. Just a complete dominant performance here. The official scores, let me pull them up right here, were 50-44, 50-44, and 50-45. Usman wins the welterweight title. Woodley straight up said, hey, no excuses, it just wasn't my night. And Usman, after the fight, brought in his daughter, his mother, his whole family, talked about his humble beginnings, said, hey, I know I'm not the best wrestler, I know I'm not the best striker, but when I mix this shit up, I'm the best person on the planet. And then he thanked the fans, thanked his daughter, said she lit a fire under his ass, and he was holding her and said, I want you to remember this moment for the rest of your life and know that your dad was a champion. It was just a beautiful, star-making moment. I wish Kamaru Usman the very best. He's going to have some tough competition, though, because you got to remember, Woodley could get a rematch down the road. You have RDA, who's always a dangerous fighter if he could get back in contention. And you have Colby Covington, who's a damn good wrestler. I think a guy that's kind of a boring fighter and honestly a huge Chael Sonnen ripoff. But he's making a lot of noise. They cut to him in the crowd. I saw some tweets of people that were in the live audience that said that those two had to be separated after the fight. So we'll see what happens there. But I guess Covington versus Usman is next. And I don't know if that's going to be that much of an exciting fight, but I would definitely, definitely favor Usman there. That being said about Covington, as much as I don't like the guy, he did win the interim title from RDA, only for UFC to say, we don't really feel like booking you, so we're going to have Usman instead. What? I mean, they even brought him to the White House to pose with Donald Trump with the fake belt, only to not give him the title shot with the real belt. I don't get it. I just don't freaking get it. And then on top of that, right, speaking of interim titles, for whatever strange reason, next month, I believe April 13th, okay, UFC 236, we're getting Max Holloway versus Dustin Poirier for the interim lightweight championship because, of course, Habib is on suspension for that pull-apart brawl with Conor McGregor and his team. So we're April 13th, okay? It's a little over a month. Holloway versus Poirier for interim lightweight title. And Kelvin Gastelum versus Israel Adesanya for the interim middleweight title since Whitaker is going to be out till maybe the end of the year. What? And here's another thing, too. And maybe I'm just forgetting something here and I'm trying to Google it if I'm mistaken this. What the hell happened to Jacare? Shouldn't Jacare have the title shot? Didn't Jacare, knock out Chris Weidman? Like, what is this here? What are we doing here? Okay? I feel bad that Kelvin Gastelum didn't get the title shot, okay? Because Robert Whittaker got sick. Usman, he beat Silva in the main event, okay. But, like, Jacare's been around forever. He's a legend. Brazil's still one of your biggest markets. I mean, with all due respect to Gastelum, I'd rather see Souza in there. I don't know. I don't know. And aren't Jacare and Silva friends? Like, it would make a good story. I don't know. So, yeah, that is a weird one. But speaking of weird, we'll get to what's coming up next for UFC. Let's focus on this card right here. Ben Askren defeated Robbie Lawler via technical submission. Bulldog choke at round number one. 3 minutes, 20 seconds. That was a hell of a fight for as long as it lasted. Funky Ben Askren, the former Bellator and ONE champion, maybe the best welterweight to never fight in the UFC. Certainly one of the best fighters. I wouldn't say he's up there with like Fedor or anybody like that, right? I mean, Fedor's probably the best fighter to never fight in the UFC, other than, you know, the legend Bob Sapp. Kidding, maybe. But, you know, he came into this fight with all these credentials, you know, Olympic-level wrestler. He went for the takedown. Robbie Lawler picked him up. And I swear, this is like a torture rack, very similar to, like, to Lex Luger. Or if Japanese wrestling fans know, like, the Burning Hammer. And he just slammed the guy on his head, hitting him with punches. And Herb Dean, who, to quote one commenter from earlier in the night, called the most indecisive ref in the history of MMA, and honestly one of the most overrated, he didn't stop the fight. Ben Askren's getting busted up, bleeding from the mouth, bleeding from the eye. I mean, he's taking some hard-ass shots. Herb Dean's like, oh, should I stop it? Oh, should I stop it? Oh, I don't know. So somehow, some way, Askren survived. He got the takedown, was getting Lawler's back, had him up against the cage. Lawler wasn't in too much danger, but then Askren locked in the bulldog choke, which, if you don't know what a bulldog choke is, imagine, you know, a bulldog in wrestling, right? You grab the head, kind of like a headlock, and then you bulldog him. Well, instead of just, you know, slamming the guy on the ground, he held onto that bulldog, the headlock position, had him for a choke. Lawler had his arm across the head of Askren, and then it dropped. Kind of similar to pro wrestling, honestly. And Herb Dean was like, oh my God, he's out. Rogan was like, oh my God, he's out. Me at home was like, oh my God, he's out. Herb Dean stops the fight. And then Lawler just gets right back up and goes, what the hell? Looked fresh as a daisy. Now, again, from my vantage point, not being in the cage, being the referee, I thought Lawler was out. But Herb Dean was right there. He had a front row seat. Okay, he was right there. Bad, bad call. In Herb Dean's indecisive defense, Ben Askren did say after the fight, he asked Robbie Lawler, Robbie didn't answer, and yeah, they stopped the fight. I don't know. This is weird. Ben Askren's had a weird career. For those that don't know, he was in Bellator. He was a dominant welterweight champion. I thought they should have kept him, but it got to the point where Bellator was like, we think your ass is boring. See ya. And they just let him go. He was the welterweight champion. They just let him go. And then he goes to Asia, fights for one FC, you know, one championship for many years. UFC, I guess, maybe to combat their antitrust lawsuit, which I think it's the one from Kung Lee. I don't know. They have like a million lawsuits against them being a monopoly and whatever. And, you know, certainly they have some valid points. But anyway, UFC was probably thinking, damn, this is costing us a lot of money legally. Let's prove to the court that we can allow fighters to go somewhere else and let them have their contracts. So they traded Mighty Mouse Johnson, one of the greatest fighters ever, after he lost the Cejudo fight in the title, the flyweight title, to one for Ben Askren, who at the time was retired. What? So here's Ben Askren, a guy who Dana White called, you know, the human Ambien, fighting in an exciting fight, mainly exciting because he got slammed on his head and got smashed, locking in a bulldog choke, and winning under controversial circumstances. This is straight out of pro wrestling. So if they don't give my main man, Bob Lawler, an immediate rematch after this, then to hell with UFC matchmaking. I'm already pissed off about the interim titles. I'm already pissed off about my man Jacare being left out. I'm already pissed off about Tony Ferguson being left out in the Poirier and Holloway fight, okay? Do a damn triple threat match, whatever. Ferguson earned that damn fight. And if they don't give Bob Lawler an immediate rematch, come on, son. That's just ridiculous. So I don't know. I mean, on one hand, I can sympathize with Herb. On the other hand, this dude's so damn indecisive. Like, oh, do I separate Jones and Smith? Oh, do I stop this fight? Oh, do I let a guy have his head get hit and blown off into Mars, you know, before it's like, oh, I know he's one of the better referees, but I feel like there's such a low bar in MMA. There's such a low bar with refereeing that we just kind of accept it. And it's like, eh. I mean, UFC got a multi-million dollar deal with ESPN. At some point, we should get some damn officials. I know the state pays them. Whatever. Let the UFC throw some money at the state to get some better officials. Something. Anyway, I feel bad for Bob Lawler. Did I mention that? Look, no disrespect to Askren. I'm a fan of his fights. But dude got lucky. dude got lucky. I don't know what else to say, bro. He got lucky there. Oh my goodness. Anyway, somebody that did not get lucky and just had a great performance, Willie Zhang, the women's strawweight prospect, the rising prospect, defeated Tisha Torres via unanimous decision, 29-28, 30-27, 30-27. I thought this should have been 29-28 across the board. Even Torres kind of did. Like, wait a second. Like, I didn't win any round. But really good performance by Zhang. Comes off as such a sweetheart. She was telling Torres after a fight she hopes they can be friends. Super marketable. Really fun fighter to watch, and I think somebody we should definitely keep an eye on in the women's strawweight division, especially with UFC trying to expand in Asia. And, you know, look, one's the top promotion in Asia right now. You know, some people may be debating how inflated their cash flow is, how inflated their reach actually is in reality, but hey, they're paying real money. They got Mighty Mouse. They paid for Misha Tate to be an executive. I think Rich Franklin's still an executive for them. They got a deal with Bleacher Report Live and Turner Sports. So, you know, UFC definitely wants Zhang to be a top contender for obvious reasons. Speaking of top contenders, Pedro Munhoz knocked out Cody Garbrandt in round number one, 452 of round one. Hell of a fight while it lasted. Munhoz did not exactly have a great game plan. It was like, hey, I'm going to get punched in the face too. And I'm going to punch Cody Garbrandt and Cody's going to punch me. But dude had the chin. He took some shots, knocked out Garbrandt. Tough sledding for Cody Garbrandt. Here's a guy that was a rising star, talks a lot of shit, has a marketable look, you know, very unique look with a neck tattoo and everything else. Looks like rough and tough dude, sponsored by Kobe Bryant's Body Armor Energy Drink. And what happens? Well, let's look at those last three results. Knockout against TJ Dillashaw in round number two. TKO against TJ Dillashaw in round number one. And knocked out by Pedro Munhoz. Guy goes from 11-0 to 11-3. These are the pitfalls of MMA, my friends. And I hope for this man's sake he can get back on track. Because he's still really young, but he's taking a lot of damage. Three straight knockout losses. Yeah, not a good look for him. You know, in retrospect, it probably wasn't a good idea for Garbrandt to run it back with Dillashaw. It was probably good for his you know, paycheck and everything, but might have been good to give him a little time to, you know, further develop. But, you know, that's a sport. Look at Chris Weidman. One minute you're kicking Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort's asses. The next minute, you know, you're losing in a heartbreaking fashion to Jacare and Yoel Romero. We had Zabit Magomed Sharipov, I'll call him Zabit, as most people know him, defeated Jeremy Stephens in a really exciting fight, 29-28 across the board. Fans were booing this decision. I really don't understand that. I thought Zabit definitely won the fight. But a great performance by him. Stephens held his own as well. And yeah, I got to give it to him. It was a great fight and a great way to close out the ESPN prelims. We had Johnny Walker, who sounds like an alcoholic beverage, and if I was somebody who drank alcohol, I would drink a Johnny Walker, I guess. He defeated Misha Cirkunov 36 seconds into round number one with a flying knee. And then Johnny Walker pulled was it Martin Gramatica? There was a kicker back in the day that hit a game-winning field goal, and then he did a stupid dance, and he blew out his knee and was out the rest of the season. Johnny Walker knocked out Misha Cirkunov with a flying knee, and then did some weird version of the worm, but he like dead weighted himself and fell on the mat and dislocated his shoulder. He said he wants to continue to fight top contenders, put himself over. This guy is super marketable. I mean, he was ranked what, number 15, number 14 going into this fight. He beat a legit guy. I mean, he really beat a legit guy. You'll get who he's beaten. I mean, he won in Dana's Contender Series, knocked out Khalil Roundtree, defeated Justin Ledet, and now this. I mean, all three in his UFC fights, first round finishes. Crazy. Not even 2 minutes into the fight. So I'm curious to see where he goes from here. He's 17-3, but super marketable. Hopefully he can heal up, and that's not something that causes long-term damage. It's very similar. You know, Randy Orton had a match with Edge, I think, in WWE. I believe it was either like 09 or 2010, where Orton was pounding the mat before he was RKO, and he ended up dislocating his shoulder as well. So I guess he pulled a Randy Orton there. Cody Stamann defeated Alejandro Perez via unanimous decision, 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. Diego Sanchez, what a man. What a man. A guy who's been with the UFC for like 15 years. That's unheard of. Okay, I mean, other like Robbie Lawler. I mean, that's pretty much unheard of. This guy's been fighting forever. Everybody thinks Diego's done. They're throwing in the towel. He's taken so much damage in his career. He's had all these wars. He comes in against Mickey Gall, and he kicks his ass for two rounds, dominates him in the wrestling, outstrikes him, and defeats him via TKO in round number two. Whew. What can I say about Diego Sanchez? I know he's back to being the nightmare, but, I mean, that guy's the American dream, man. He's killing it. He's still killing it. And I don't know if this guy can still beat, like, real fighters. You know, I want to say real fighters as in, like, contenders. But it's always great to see Diego have an awesome performance, and the fans still love him. And, yeah, I guess Gall's going to learn from this. You know, he's lost before via unanimous decision, but he's never been dragged into deep water like this. And you hope a kid from New Jersey like him can bounce back. Because, hey, he's from my area. I'd like to see him do well. We had Edmund Sabazian defeat Charles Byrd via TKO, 38 seconds in round number one on the Fight Pass prelims. We also had Macy Chiazin defeat Gina Mazzani via TKO, also in round number one. We had Hannah Cyphers defeat Pollyanna Viana via split decision in a women's strawweight bout to open the show. Overall, though, I mean, look at this, right? We had 6 finishes on this show. A pretty exciting card. Definitely worth the price of admission, unless, of course, you paid to see a more competitive welterweight fight, even though I was entertained by it. And unless, of course, you paid to see a much more competitive light heavyweight fight, which it wasn't. But overall, I would still give it overall, from top to bottom, I would give it a thumbs up. Now, as for what's on the horizon here, well, we got a lot going on, okay? Think about this, okay? We got UFC 236. We know that is coming up, right? But after that, we've got a UFC Fight Night in Kansas. Then we've got a UFC Fight Night in London. Then we've got a UFC Fight Night in Nashville. Then we've got a UFC on ESPN in Philly. And then we have UFC 236. So there are four UFC events prior to the next pay-per-view, which is taking place barely a month from now. Whew. That's crazy. So here's what we got next, coming next week. UFC Fight Night, Derek Lewis versus Junior Dos Santos, the first UFC in Wichita, Kansas. That's really, honestly, the only fight of note. I mean, you got Curtis Millender. Actually, Curtis Millender is a rising prospect competing against Elizo Zaleski Dos Santos, who's also a prospect here. But nobody that I think like most casual fans really care about, although he's on a bit of a winning streak here. But yeah, main fight you need to know about March 9th. Is Lewis versus Dos Santos, which actually I think is the anniversary, too, of Notorious B.I.G.'s death, which is very sad. R.I.P. Biggie. We also have Darren Till taking on Jorge Masvidal. Hopefully Till will actually make weight this time, although he did make weight last time when he got destroyed by Woodley. Fight night, Till versus Jorge Masvidal. We have Leon Edwards against Gunnar Nelson. That's an intriguing fight because I think Nelson... certainly could be a contender, but you know, he's shown some flashes, but we got to see. And Volkan Ozdemir is back, taking on Dominic Reyes. This fight is taking place at the O2 Arena in London, England, and this is also going to be at ESPN+. So the UFC fight next week, ESPN+. I believe this one as well, also on ESPN+. And then we've got UFC Fight Night. Steven Wonderboy Thompson against Anthony Showtime Pettis at welterweight. Yeah, Pettis fighting at welterweight, which is kind of crazy to think about. He had a great fight against Tony Ferguson, a competitive fight against Tony Ferguson, which he lost via TKO due to a corner stoppage back in October. I'm kind of surprised he's not staying at lightweight, honestly. But, hey, he wants to try his luck at welterweight. Maybe the lack of a weight cut will help him here. I think Thompson's definitely a winnable fight for him, too. We got Curtis Blaydes taking on Justin Willis. So not a bad card here. This is taking place in Nashville on ESPN+. And then we have an ESPN card, the second main card on ESPN, which is Edson Barboza, who's looked great lately, taking on one of the most exciting fighters of all time, and Justin Gaethje. That could go either way. Hopefully Gaethje doesn't take a million shots to the dome. And then we got Karolina Kowalkiewicz, if I pronounced that correctly, taking on the karate hottie Michelle Waterson. So that looks like a fun card, at least the top two fights. That's taking place March 30th in Philly. And then we, of course, have the aforementioned UFC 236 taking place in Hotlanta, which also had the Super Bowl this year. April 13th, and we got Holloway versus Poirier. That's right, it's the same Max Holloway that is the UFC featherweight champion, fighting the guy he lost in his UFC debut to in Dustin Poirier for the interim lightweight title. And Tony Ferguson is nowhere to be found, even though that guy beat Anthony Pettis fair and square, beat Kevin Lee fair and square, won the interim lightweight title fair and square. It's ridiculous. And then we have Israel Adesanya, Kelvin Gastelum for the middleweight championship, the interim middleweight championship, I should say. That one's a little more understandable given Robert Whittaker's health issues. But Holloway and Poirier, what if Holloway wins? You're going to hold up the featherweight division now? What if Poirier wins? That makes the featherweight division look bad, or at least the featherweight champion look kind of bad. And not only that, but, you know, let's just say Holloway takes some damage. Medical suspension. That further holds up the division. I'm tired of this. I understand holding up divisions when you want to do super fights like Daniel Cormier, you know, being in a thin light heavyweight division fighting Stipe, or you know, Conor McGregor, obviously, or doing the dream fight of Nunez versus Cyborg, because Cyborg has never been really challenged. But this is getting ridiculous. Also on the card, Nikita Krylov against OSP, Ovince St. Preux. Eric Anders, who's an exciting fighter, taking on Khalil Roundtree. So, yeah, a lot of UFC action coming up. That's not even including Bellator and all the events one has and everything else. I mean, yeah, a lot of action coming our way. But overall, to focus on UFC 235, a hell of a show. But, again, not without controversy. Now, before I go, let's get to some of the comments here. Jimbo Big says that wasn't John Jones' best performance. John Jones would tell you that, too. He actually mentioned that. It wasn't his best performance. Okay, King Glass says UFC is really petty with him. Yep. Jimbo Big says Ben Askren got lucky. Yeah, he definitely did there. With all due respect to Ben Askren, he definitely did. Fred, do you want to see Cormier versus Miocic 2? This is from Jeff Alexander. No, because Cormier beat him fair and square. Cormier is getting up there in age. He's only got a couple more fights left. I think they should be money fights against Brock Lesnar if that ever happens. Maybe against John Jones. Maybe against Bob Sapp. But yeah, definitely not. Oh, and, okay, it wouldn't be bad on paper. I think it might be a more competitive fight. But Cormier beat him decisively. And what's Stipe done since then? Not much. But who do I think would win? I think Cormier would still win. And yeah, so overall, I'd say still a thumbs up show, but Herb Dean, you got to get your ass in order, bro. You really do. So, folks, if you enjoyed this update, please click the like button. Please share this with all your friends. Please subscribe to our podcast on YouTube, SoundCloud, all major podcast sites. If you enjoyed this video, don't forget to enable notifications for more breaking news updates. And until next time, as always, enjoy the fights.